Hey everybody, welcome back to episode 48 of Fitness Scanner Podcast. I am joined today by Coach Steve Barrick. He is the strength and conditioning coach of University of Indianapolis. He has his bachelor's in exercise science from University of Indianapolis and his master's in physical education and health from University of Indianapolis also. And we linked up because I watched a video of Steve talking, and one of the things that really stood out to me was he said that he likes to see hardworking people succeed. And that's kind of, you know, it's kind of one of my philosophies too. Like, you really, when you put forth a lot of effort, there's no reason you shouldn't succeed. So we kind of messed in that way. So I thought he'd have a lot of awesome things to bring to the table, and he has a really good outlook and perspective on strength and conditioning and health and wellness and fitness as a whole. So Coach Barrick, I appreciate you taking the time, brother.
Thanks, Eric. I appreciate it, man. Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. So fill in some gaps for us and tell everybody, you know, who you are, where you're from, what you do, and we can kind of go from there.
Okay. My name is Steve Barrick. I'm the head strength conditioning coach at University of Indianapolis. I've been here for 7 years. I've been in the field for probably about, I'd say, 14, 15 years. I started off as a high school strength coach. Prior to that, I was a football player in high school and in college, and I went to Franklin College, and I got my sociology degree undergrad from Franklin, and you know, it's that typical, you probably hear this from a lot of strength coaches, is, you know, I wasn't the best player, you know, I wasn't the most talented guy on the field, you know, I started and played and did all that kind of thing and accepted my role. But I really fell in love with the weight room. I think I loved the preparation more than I actually loved the sport, if that makes any sense. I mean, I love athletics. I love football. But the weight room is really where I like to be the most. And I think that kind of started with me in high school. But you know, I spent a lot of time in the weight room and realized, you know, this is where I feel at home. I feel like I have a knack for this. I feel like, you know, when I go home, I write up programs and I write down everything I did, and I kept track of everything that I did. And so that kind of led me into being, you know, wanting to get into the world of fitness and health and all that. So that led me to contacting a lot of coaches. I sent out a broad email basically to every coach I could think of, whether it be high school, college, it didn't matter. And so finally I got a phone call from one coach, Mike Gillen, and he invited me to come over to Indian Creek High School, which is about 20 minutes south of Indianapolis, small school, farming community. And so I went there and I said, I'm interested in being the strength and conditioning coach. He said, all right. He said, you know, tell me a little bit about, you know, what you can offer us. And so we went through all that whole thing. And he said, all right, well, on top of being the strength and conditioning coach, you're going to coach D line and O line as well. So I got my start being the football strength coach along with the football coach, and loved every minute of that. And I made another, you know, stop at Franklin Community High School along the way, a little bit bigger school. And then that led me here to the University of Indianapolis. And so I took a different path than what many might take to the collegiate level. But I felt like at the Division II level, you know, we'll get into the differences, I think, between Division I and Division II and you know, big school versus small school. But, you know, I felt like I, in terms of preparation and development, you know, I felt like I had the tools that needed to, you know, be in place to make this successful here at UIndy. So, and then fast forward 7 years and I'm still here, and, you know, our kids are still having success, and you know, we're working at it every single day. So that's just kind of that's kind of me in a nutshell, I guess. But I'm very, very blessed to be where I'm at and love it here at the University of Indianapolis.
That's awesome. And you're right about one thing for sure, that a lot of coaches do kind of get that, you know, they go in that similar direction where they say, oh, I wasn't the best on the field, but let's not undersell. Don't undersell yourself. Like, if you go to college to play football, and you were a decorated, you know, high school athlete too, like you like letter 4 years in a row. And I mean, you were all right. You know, like I'll give you some right. credit. I'll give you some dap, even though you don't want to give it to yourself. I'll give it to you.
Well, I appreciate that.
And another thing that you mentioned, I hear that a lot, that a lot of strength coaches step into the role and they take on multiple roles, not just as a strength and conditioning coach. You know, there's a lot of roles that need to be filled in a sports organization, especially in a college. So that's not unusual either. Dive a little bit more into Correct. Where you think the difference is, because you touched on a little bit, the differences of D1, D2, D3, strength and conditioning and where it's going to lead, because we touched on it when we talked earlier. And it sounded like to me you were you had a lot of insight on seeing Division III step it up, Division II step it up, and kind of catch up to where Division I has been in the past maybe decade or so.
Yes, and you know, you're starting to see more and more jobs come open at these smaller schools, which needs to happen. And you know, I think it's like we talked about on the phone the other day. I'm starting to see strength and conditioning be not, I don't know if it's in the realm of athletic training, but if you have athletics, you have athletic trainers, which is, it's a no brainer and it's got to happen. So I believe that strength and conditioning needs to kind of start to be seen the same way. And, you know, I think that we all complement each other very well in terms of working with the athletic training staff, working with the coaching staff to A, make these athletes perform at the highest level that they can perform at from a physical standpoint, and B, you know, I want to make the athletic training staff's job a little bit easier. They don't have as many kids to work with because we have done the necessary and proper things to prevent them from getting injured. And is that, you know, we can't put 100% on ourselves that we're the reason that kids aren't getting hurt. Injuries happen. Things
right.
like that happen. It's just the way it is. But can we cut down on some of the overuse and some of these different soft tissue injuries and things like that? And so I think that's very, very necessary. And also from the standpoint of if there's a workout going on in the weight room, there should be somebody who is certified and knows what they're doing. And I know this has come into the news lately because you know, of some of the things that have been happening in other schools, and you know, deaths and severe injuries and things like that. And you know, so how are we going to you know, make this where we do have the proper people in place in the weight rooms to make sure that these things don't happen, or at least, you know, give us an opportunity to prevent these things.
Right.
So I believe that should be, and I don't care if it's what division, what level it's at, high school, middle school, if there's a weight training session going on, there should be somebody there who, not just an overseer, but somebody who's going to coach these athletes to do things correctly.
Right.
And, you know, our motto here, and I've stolen this from Chris Carlisle, and who's with the Seahawks, and you know, I'm sure there's other coaches who've said this along the way, but, you know, our philosophy in training is we like to do it right. So technique is first and foremost. Do it fast. We worry then about the speed of the movement, the speed that we put on the bar, or the speed in which we move. And three, then we do it heavy, and that the weight takes care of itself. So it's all kind of relative. And you know, putting a little bit less emphasis on that heavy part in the beginning, teaching these kids how to do all these movements correctly, because that's what it's all about, is movement.
Definitely.
You know, I think when it comes to Division II, and I'll be the first to tell you, I can't speak on Division I from 100% complete confidence standpoint because I've never been there. I have a lot of friends, a lot of mentors, a lot of colleagues, a lot of friends that coach at the Division I level, and I ask a ton of questions. And so a lot of the things that I believe and a lot of the things that I talk about are based off the things that I've gotten from these people that I trust and, you know that they're really not going to pull any punches. And I go and I visit these places and I spend my time there and I kind of, you know, see these things. So I don't really speak about things that I haven't seen or what I think to be, oh, maybe this is how it is. I speak on the things that I've heard and seen when it comes to Division I level. But, you know, I think one of the biggest things Division II versus Division I is our resources.
Right.
I think that's one of the biggest things when it comes down to money, when it comes down to, you know, the support staff that we may have. You know, I'm very fortunate in my position where I have a full-time assistant coach, 2 grad assistants, and then I'm able to have, you know, however many interns I can get. But, you know, we don't have the training tables. We don't have the big, you know, the bigger athletic training rooms where we can do a lot of recovery protocols, you know, those kind of things. We have to improvise and find different ways to do these things, and we have to put a lot of the responsibility on the kids. So, you know, instead of walking the kids over to the training table, you know, every night to make sure that they're eating this and doing things right from a nutritional standpoint, it's our job to then educate them. And I always say I walk that fine line between being a strength coach and being a nutritionist. I am not a certified registered dietitian, therefore I cannot give somebody, you know, a diet to follow and things like that.
Sure.
So I will give them all of the guidelines, you know, we'll fill out food logs, we'll do a lot of different things so that I can then give them advice on some things that they need to do. And then we go from there. But, you know, we have to put a lot of responsibility on the kids to make sure that they're doing things right from that standpoint. But, you know, and recovery is another thing. You know, we change the way that we program a little bit based on the fact that, you know, we don't have the recovery tools. Our kids may not be as genetically gifted as a Division I player may be. Now, that's not all of them. I'm just saying that's in general.
Sure.
For the most part, because we do have some kids that are very genetically gifted and, you know, they're here for a reason or whatever. But so we take all of those things into account, and then we kind of piece together the way that we're going to conduct our training sessions and those kind of things. So, you know, I think resources and just the way that we, you know, schedule, the way that we conduct our sessions may be a little bit different, but when it really comes down to it, the lifts that we do, the same. You know, we're going to do the same things from a conditioning standpoint. We're going to do the same things from speed development standpoint. And, you know, and it all comes down to knowing your athletes.
So right.
When I'm programming anything, when I'm doing, you know, a speed development session or whatever, I got to know my athletes and that, and then, you know, what they're capable of, what they're not capable of, and assess along the way. And as I do that, then we progress at the rate in which I feel is appropriate for our athletes.
Yeah, absolutely. And that kind of probably goes across the board for all divisions. One thing I think that you really hit on the head was, and this was kind of talked about in episode 44 with my guest, Dr. Haley, was that athletics and athletic trainers and those kind of, all those people in the profession need to be on the same level. I think underneath everything, there might be like a little, let's just stick with, you know, strength and conditioning and athletic trainers, for instance, there might be a little competitive nature there where, you know, one side might say, well, what I'm teaching you is 100% the right way. You know, strength and conditioning doesn't know what they're talking about, or strength and conditioning might be saying the exact same thing about athletic training. When it comes down to it, when it all boils down, both sides want the best for the athletes. So why not just come together and talk about it? And I think that's starting to happen more and more because everybody's starting to realize that even though they're in a different part of the industry, it's all underneath that umbrella. And if you're keeping the players of any sport injury free and healthy and productive, then it's a win-win. And you know, it's interesting. I was talking to a former football player from Morehead State, and he was talking about, you know, if he sees an excess of injuries on the field, most of the time that will relate back to what's going on in the weight room. And you kind of touched on that too. It's just, it's a matter of finding what works with people. Now, obviously, you know, you've, especially in explosive sports like football, I mean, you got a lot of meat flying around, right? I mean, you're not playing chess. You're going to get hit. You might get hurt. I mean, there's just more power, more speed equals more potential for injury. But if things are going right in the weight room, if everybody's talking to each other, then the injury reduction is greatly decreased.
Absolutely. And one thing that, you know, I made sure that the first thing I did when I got here was to develop a great relationship with our athletic training staff. And we've continued that. We've had the same head athletic trainer for the 7 years that I've been here. And we have a great relationship. Now that goes for every sport. So, you know, I make a point to make sure that I've got a good relationship with all of these athletic trainers. Every athletic trainer includes me on all of the injury reports. So we get these injury reports, and I go over these injury reports on a daily basis with our coaches. And we got to know, okay, you know, we're looking at, do we see a rash of anything that's going on here? Why might this be happening? What are some things we can do to change this? Then we get with the coaches, and you know, we'll discuss these things and talk about, you know, here are some changes maybe we can make in the weight room, or here are maybe some changes that need to be made in practice. And the, you know, it kind of goes back to another thing that Division I versus Division II or smaller schools is, you know, we don't have the catapult systems, we don't have, you know, those GPS monitoring systems where you can really measure the output that they're putting in practice or in the weight room. It's all based on coach's eye. So I make sure that my coaches know, all right, here's the intensity, here's the volume, here's how we want to go about doing things in an in-season manner. So, and versus, you know, out of season in terms of volume, in terms of intensity, in terms of, so we are going to, we're going to back things off a little bit, and you know, there might be times when we could have pushed a little bit more,
right?
But I'm going to be a little conservative, and that's going to help keep the athlete, you know, safe and injury free. And, you know, but, you know, if we were able to have those catapult systems and things like that, that would give us some immediate feedback and accurate data that we could go off of. We just don't have, you know, that goes back to the resources. But
right,
you know, I see myself, I don't want to consider myself an old school type coach. I try to educate myself, you know, on all these things all the time, and so that I can, if I ever get the opportunity to have some of these things, I can do it. But you know, I make sure that I bring in really, really smart young coaches who have been a part of this and done these kind of things, and they can educate me. So I learn a ton from my assistant coaches that I bring in, my GAs, my interns. I mean, they really go out and they do their homework. So but back to the point about the athletic training staff. I mean, we make sure that we're on the same page with everything. There is no, you know, him versus me, them versus us type thing.
Right.
Yeah, there's no egos. And this is the way I say it. We're a puzzle. So every piece has to fit together properly, and every piece has to be present for us to be successful. So if, you know, and you talk about the umbrella, it's the same concept.
Yep.
We've all got to be on the same page with everything, with every athlete, and know exactly what we're doing. So we spend a lot of time doing that. And, you know, so people are like, well, why are you working 14, 15, 16 hour a day? That's just a little part of what we do on a daily basis outside of just coming in and, you know, training athletes. I mean, we are constantly monitoring the injury status and those kind of things with our athletes.
Yeah, and that comes from open communication with the athletes too, which I would imagine from the few Division I, Division II athletes that I've trained, just in one-on-one, not even in a group setting. If you ask them, you know, how'd that feel? How'd that weight feel? How's your recovery going on? They're going to tell you fine. They're going to tell you great. Like how often do you hear an athlete say, oh, that weight just kicked my ass? Like they want to get right back after it and do it again. You know, it's kind of the nature of being an athlete, male and female. It doesn't really matter. I mean, I trained an extremely talented Division I volleyball player, and I could see it in her face that it was a struggle to do an exercise. Sure. But she did it in great form, and everything was like spot on. And then, you know, you're writing down weights and everything, and you look, hey, how'd that weight feel? Fine. Oh, come on. You know, no problem. Yeah. So that open,
get that all the time.
Yeah, so that open communication, especially when it comes to recovery and rest, because that's, I mean, now more than ever in the past, what, 5 or 10 years, especially football has come under, you know, great scrutiny with rest and recovery. So having, you know, not having as many resources and being able to translate that between athlete and coach, I mean, that's huge to be able to say, hey, you have to be open and honest with me in terms of how your recovery is going.
And I, and you know, it goes back to the whole thing. Never underestimate, you know, the coach's eye, really. You know, I think that's why it's important when somebody is bringing somebody in to be a strength and conditioning coach that, you know, they're able to see these things. And, you know, we want the feedback from the athletes, but you know, we've got to have the eye where, okay, yeah, I can kind of tell how difficult that was or how, you know, did that cause pain or did that, you know, those kind of things. And, you know, sometimes I know it sounds simple when we just kind of talk about it like this, but when you get out on the floor and you see it thousands and thousands and thousands of times, that's when you really start to develop that sense of, okay, now I know that this is a challenging weight for this athlete to use. And,
right.
You know, sometimes you sit there and you think, okay, that looks to be about 80%. That looks to be about 85%. I mean, you know, you start to kind of actually put it into that kind of context. But, you know, and so I think that's a very valuable tool as a coach. And that's what I tell my assistant coaches and my GAs and my interns, you know, you got to sit there and you've got to watch athletes lift over and over and over and over again for an extended period of time before you can really start to, you know, make the call on what they need to be doing and what they don't need to be doing, you know, because sometimes it's kind of hard to read, sometimes very easy, but, you know, they need to have just reps. It's just like lifting, you know,
yeah.
Like anything, it's like running. You gotta have reps.
Do you think that if, you know, there ever comes a time when you get to use all of that, all the training tools you mentioned earlier, like, do you think that would take away from your creativity or do you think you'd still have plenty of creativity? Because obviously, like, you know, the more tools you have, the easier it is on a coach, and, you know, the more beneficial it is for both sides, coaches and athletes. But you're not having all of that, like being able to spot like that 80% out of one athlete and 50% out of another. Mm-hmm. I mean, those are tools that maybe a strength and conditioning, like a new coach getting into the business, if they have that right away, but they don't know how to spot an athlete's actual intensity just by eye. I mean, it's a technique that goes into that, right? It's almost like an art.
Sure. Sure. And I'm going to take this even a step further with you here is I see a lot of coaches in the strength and conditioning field who will come in and have very little time with, you know, in actually training themselves. So, and I like to say you need to live under the bar. You need to spend time under the bar so you know you can feel what you're having these athletes go through. And I know this is kind of, you know, this has been said many, many times, but, you know, you got to have that experience yourself so that you know what you're looking at with your athletes. And a lot of times now we get a lot of coaches coming in who who can, they can regurgitate any textbook you ask them about in the field of strength. They can talk about any scientific study. They can tell you how to run catapult. They can tell you how to run, you know, elite form or whatever it might be, you know, whatever these monitoring systems are. They can tell you all about that, but they can't properly perform a squat.
Right.
They can't properly tell somebody how to set up on the bench press. They can't tell somebody, you know, they can't show somebody how to do a lot of the lifts that we want them to do. So, you know, I got to have, and instead of just saying, well, you know, you don't fit the mold here, let's, I'm going to take their strengths, and I'm going to take them to the side, and I'm going to improve their weaknesses now. So I'm going to put them under a bar. I'm going to teach them how to squat. I'm going to, you know, I want them to squat properly by me teaching them, and then I want them to teach me how to squat. All right, now take me through the teaching progression on how to squat. You know, how to pull, how to hinge, all these different movements, and they've just got to spend a lot of time doing that.
Yeah.
And I think that's how I got my start. I will say that my strength came from a lot of trial and error and spending time, you know, 20 years training with weights, and that's where I kind of developed my knowledge. And then now I'm very well read. I read a lot. I watch a lot in terms of videos, and I listen to a lot of podcasts, and I seek out great coaches, and I learn a lot, and I've done all that. But I'm 38 years old, so when you get a 21-year-old, 22-year-old kid, you know, you got to expose them to all these things. And I think that's vital. I think it's very important. And I think it's something that's starting to be a little bit overlooked these days.
Yeah, I think you're right.
So I truly believe that it's important that they have the ability to be under the bar and a little bit of trial and error and figure some things out for themselves. And then that makes, you know, these systems, these GPS systems and things like that, now make a little bit more sense to them. So can I still be creative? Absolutely. And I think there's a lot of really good strength coaches out there that utilize these systems and are still very creative in the way that they go about their programming and are very, you know, can differentiate between the two. But then you just use use those systems just as a little bit of a, I don't know, justification maybe. We're on the right track. Here we go. We're on the right track. But they also have a way to really quickly identify if they are, you know, pushing it a little too far or if they're not, you know,
right,
doing quite enough.
Yeah, because numbers don't lie. I mean, that's, you know, when it comes down to it. You know, if you got solid research to back up everything that you're doing, then, I mean, obviously as a coach, you can see an athlete progress and you can see the numbers. You can see how they're performing on and off the field and how many times they've been injured and X, Y, Z. But, you know, having solid numbers to back up all that data never hurts. So going along with all of that, you know, a freshman or a new recruit or somebody walks into your facility for the first time, what's that first visit look like in terms of meeting the staff and programming? Where do you go when somebody new walks in?
Okay, so we have what we call our Developmental One program. And I tell this to every recruit that walks through the door. Every recruit, every new athlete, every transfer, it doesn't matter what level you're at. Everybody starts at the same level with me. And because you know how it is, you've got kids who have been, you know, junior national weightlifting competitors who can do every lift under the sun very, very well. And you've got athletes that come in who, you know, maybe went to a small school somewhere and has never seen a weight room in their entire life. And so you've got two big ends of the spectrum, and you don't want to take their word for it all the time. Well, coach, I squatted 500 pounds in high school. All right, well, let me see you squat. You know,
right.
So I start everybody at the same level, and then we go through our progressions. So we have a progression for about everything. And as we go through our progressions, then I can assess and I can, you know, figure out strengths and weaknesses and all those kind of things. And then from there, we will progress them accordingly. But that developmental one program is going to be very, very basic. We're going to learn how to squat. We're going to learn how to hinge. We're going to learn how to press. We're going to learn how to pull. Any kind of chins, any kind of rows, those kind of things. We're just going to teach the basics so we're blue in the face and get a good base of strength going.
Yep.
And, you know, probably along the way, we're going to work a lot of hip mobility. We're going to do a lot of testing in terms of flexibility and figuring out where they're at and working on that and just seeing them move. And so it's a very, very, very simple way to go about it, but it's a very effective way to go about it. And, you know, I think it's really, it really helps us to teach our kids and make them understand that, you know, technique is going to be the first thing on everything, and it's always going to be important.
Yep.
The minute things break down technically in our weight room, we take a step back and, you know, we take weight off the bar or whatever it is, and, you know, and then we kind of start over and we work back up. And so I think that really, instead of them coming in and showing off what they can do, it's not about that at all. It's about, you know, it's also about learning the way that we go about, you know, doing our cues. I want them to know our verbiage, and I want them to get to know our coaches and all that kind of thing, and, you know, develop relationships and develop trust and those kind of things, and then off we go. And then, you know, they're going to progress at the rate in which they are capable of, with those, you know, me kind of, you know, putting a foot up their rear end occasionally, things like that.
Right.
You know, and so we go from there, and our athletes have done a great job with that.
You know, you brought up a really good point about teaching the basics until you're blue in the face, because until you're blue in the face, because I was talking to a potential trainer today. I say potential because she might be added on to our team at Mission 5. But anyway, we're talking today about, she asked me, she's like, well, you know, what's one thing that really separates a good trainer? And I'm like, knowing the basics. Yep. and performing them to the best of your ability. It doesn't have to be like this big flashy thing every time somebody steps into the weight room. You know, if you know the right basics and you can execute the basics, it doesn't have to be fancy. It has to work.
Right.
that's all there is to it.
Exactly. And that's a big part of our, we're big on Olympic lifting. So in order to make things more complex, you've got to be able to do all of the basic movements very, very well. And we have a level of proficiency that we look for, and we can determine as coaches, okay, yes, we kind of checked that off the list, so to speak. And as we do that, then you kind of move into what we call our developmental two, or our intro to the Olympic lifts, and that's when we start doing more complexes and we start teaching them, you know, all of the progressions for our Olympic lifts. And that's about as complex as it gets in our whole program.
Mm-hmm.
You know, all of these basic movements you're going to do from the time you step foot on campus to the day you graduate. And, you know, the most complex you're going to get is doing some variations of the snatch or, you know, the clean, the jerk, you know, those kind of things. Outside of that, you know, we've got some kettlebell work in there. We do some strongman stuff with some of our athletes and things like that. But, you know, all of that, you can't do any of that without having the basic movement patterns that are necessary in the weight room to make sure that, you know, we stay healthy and stay safe and, you know, get
definitely
stronger, get better, and move better.
Exactly. And another thing is, you know, like you said earlier, when you get somebody new coming into the weight room for the first time, and all they want to do is demonstrate their strength instead of trying to let you help them develop strength, because that's two totally different things that people get confused, you know. And I mean, even when I'm dealing with somebody who's never strength trained before, they want to demonstrate their strength so much, you know, and be able to like force the weight up, and no matter what it takes, I'm going to get this last rep on the chest press or whatever. It's like, I believe that you're strong. You kind of take a step back. I already know you're strong. Okay. I want to try to develop some strength over here. You know, let's take some time, sure, to slow down the motion. Let's learn it properly, and let's kind of go from there. So that's, it's a really good point to, you know, take a step back and to really kind of re-educate your student athlete, I'm sure.
Absolutely. And you know, it's the whole drop the ego at the door
yeah
thing for a lot of athletes. And that's tough for them to do. And there are so many resources out there for athletes and coaches. You know, the paralysis by analysis, I believe, is true more than ever. And that is because there are so many resources. Now, a lot of resources out there are very, very good. The hard part for a young kid is sifting through and figuring out what's good and what's not.
Sure.
And I'm a firm believer that there's a thousand ways to do things and they're all correct. It's, you know, if you implement it properly and those kind of things, you know, I believe in many, many different training protocols. I really, really do. And I think sometimes these kids get caught up studying every single one of them and then can't implement anything.
Right.
And I know I'm kind of going off on a whole different tangent.
No. You're spot on, man. You are.
That's why I look at all the different systems and all of the different training protocols there are out there, and I even get a little bit overwhelmed at times. I'm like, how am I going to program this for this team, you know, based on right. all this? Okay, take a step back. All right, here's kind of the method that we want to implement, and based on what we know is correct and has worked. And again, it kind of goes back to that trial and error, so mm-hmm. to speak, a little bit over time. How have we done this for the last 15 years? Okay, well, I know that, you know, if I want to gain strength and a little bit of hypertrophy and stuff like that in our lower body, then we're going to squat and we're going to do fives. And, you know, we're going to do a lot of fives. And, you know, things like that. And so, you know, just I think a lot of times when we bring an intern in or we bring a grad assistant in, they've got a lot of great ideas because they've done so much reading and so much research and watch so many YouTube videos that they bring a lot of great ideas to the table, but right. it's like, all right, how are we going to implement this?
Yeah.
How do we implement this with this group and this group and this group? And they can't, you know, sometimes they're like, well, so I think that's a big part of the educating process for a lot of these, not only athletes, but young coaches as well, is,
yeah.
you know, find that training protocol that you believe in, that you've seen work, that you've done before, and let's put it to use. And if you've never done this before, let's find the most simple way to do things that we know works based on science and all that, and then let's go to work.
Yeah, and give a program time to develop, because I think a lot of people want to ditch a program after a month where they don't think they've seen the results that they expected, or they didn't get the results that somebody else got in a certain amount of time. You got to let a program develop, let it see its way through, and then along the way you make adjustments. It's not like a total, it doesn't have to be a total revamp of a program at 4 weeks. Oh, none of this works. Well, if a person isn't getting the complexity of a clean or a snatch or a jerk or something, then how about you tweak it? How about you dial it? How about you dial that one piece back down to just an upright row or a shrug, right. or just digress a little bit? It doesn't have to be like a whole revamp. I think that kind of goes along with that the puzzle piece that you mentioned. And you don't have to destroy mm-hmm. the entire puzzle. Don't burn the whole thing down. Take a little bit here at a time. And I think it's maybe for like those new trainers, the new coaches, even new athletes to a program, they think that, well, I got to relearn everything because this one thing didn't work. You know, it worked for somebody. It doesn't mean it can't work for you. You just have to find like your own, and it depends on who you're working with and who you're delivering it to. Are they the type of athlete that's going to receive this program well? You know, what kind of things have they done in the past? Man, it can be so complex, and to throw it all out the window. Yep. I mean, I do the same thing when somebody comes to me with something new, like, yeah, I want to implement that. I want to implement that XYZ into so-and-so's program. And then maybe you get like that little thing in the back of your head that makes you think, man, have I been doing everything, you know, wrong?
Right.
You almost start second guessing yourself, but when you dial it back down, to the basics of what you know is true, and then just add it in just a little bit, sprinkle it in just a little bit at a time. It does so much.
Absolutely. And I think that's a sign of a good coach is, yeah. All right, I've done it this way for a long time, but with this in particular, you know, group or this in particular athlete, how can I make this a little bit different to benefit them more? And, you know, that is a daily thing that we go through as coaches. And, you know, we have close to 700 athletes. We're no different than many other strength conditioning coaches at the collegiate or high school level. We have a lot of kids that we work with, and we try to get them all through on a, you know, 3 times a week basis or 4 times a week or whatever it might be. And it becomes difficult, but you've got to make adjustments on the fly.
Right.
And to an individual, to a whole group. If I see something that isn't working well for many, many of the athletes at the same time, I'll stop the group and we'll address it. We'll make the changes that need to be made, and then we'll go about our training. But I think that's very, very true. And I think a lot of it is, you know, kids, I think I've noticed more can lose interest quickly. Their attention span is way less than I think it was, you know, even 10 years ago, maybe. And so the biggest thing that I have come to grasp with a little bit is long gone are the days where this is what you're going to do because this is what I told you to do as the head coach. Here's why we're going to do what we're doing. And, you know, why do we do Olympic lifts? And I educate them. And I educate them on, you know, putting force into the ground, being violent when we jump. I change my my external cues up a little bit to make it more appealing to them, you know. And, you know, I relate things to things that they know. So, you know, the question came up, well, how do I know if I'm doing an RDL correctly? Well, okay, did you play basketball when you were growing up? Well, yeah. Okay, when you're in the lane and somebody's shooting a free throw and you bend over and grab your shorts, you know, that's an RDL. You have a flat back, your hips are hinged back, you know, your knees are slightly bent. You don't bend your knees a lot because you're tired. And, you know, so, and I'll put them in that position. I'll say, remember when you, oh yeah, okay. Now I'm going to put a barbell in their hands and I'm going to give them a couple little different cues to go along with that. And, boom, there you go. Now we're in that position, but they can always think back to grabbing onto their shorts and bending over when somebody's shooting a free throw. And, you know, in the beginning when I was young, I didn't have those thoughts. And over time, as I've gotten older, you know, I can now throw those out there. The kids get it. They can start to perform these exercises properly. They can now start to get the benefit of the RDL. They start, and if you do that with all of your exercises and all the things that you're doing, now they see the benefit of it. They feel it. They start to make progress. They start to believe in your program.
Yeah, and that creates the buy-in part. And there's more connection between you and that athlete and that person. You know, sure. you're not just telling them, all right, stop. You know, you suck at this lift. You're going to do something else. those coaching cues are so huge, I think. And they're very, I say this with just how I feel. I mean, I feel like coaching cues are extremely underutilized and maybe it's because like the part of the industry that I'm in, you know, like when I tell a client that I'm working with, stop, wait, back up, let's rethink how we're doing this, they automatically think that, you know, they're doing something wrong and they're never going to get it and, you know, it's just game over. But instead, if I have them just, hey, slow down just a second. Oh, remember to tuck your chin. Hey, remember to keep your knees bent. Those slight little cues to keep in the back of your head, and hopefully they carry over like to the next exercise or like you said, like related to something that they've already done. Like that's big. You know, I mean, something that doesn't, that's not even related to what like their actual sport might be, but they still have that cue in the background they can relate to. Yeah. That's pretty huge. I like that.
Yeah. And I was in a clinic over at IFAF run by Mike Robertson.
Yeah.
And Nick Winkelmann was one of the presenters there, and his thing was talking about internal and external cues when working with athletes, and that stuck with me. You know, that's one of those things where you take something from a clinic and you don't have to write notes.
Right.
You know, I didn't have to take notes on that for that to stick in my mind and remember that. And I've used that ever since to this day. And it's the only interaction I've ever had with Nick. And but it's you know, that half an hour little demo thing changed the course of the way that I, you know, approach, you know, the way I communicate with my athletes.
Yeah, I like that a lot, when especially the external cues. You know, when you're, well, heck, both of them. I mean, it's they're both like a vital part, and that's something that's hard for a coach to teach someone who's coming in, to teach somebody. You know, if you have a new coach coming in, do you find that that's hard to pull out of them? Because you have to have like your own little ways to do things. I know
you
that
really do.
Yeah,
you have to develop your own.
Right.
And you know, another thing about that is. What works for one, you know, a great cue that you use for one athlete may not work for another.
Right.
So you've got to have these different cues for these different athletes. And then you got to remember, hey, remember last week when I told you, you know, that, you know, when you jump, I want you to put your head through the ceiling.
Right.
Remember that?
Right.
Because that way we can get extension when we do our jumps. And, oh, yeah. Okay, now – that may not work for another athlete, and I've got to keep that in mind and remember that. And so that is a hard thing for my incoming young coaches to understand, because they're like, they get this one great coaching cue that they use that they think is always going to be effective, and it's like half the kids might understand it, the other half might not. So you got to come up with something else.
Yep.
You've always got to have something in your back pocket, and you've always got to be ready to implement it on the fly.
Yeah, one thing that pops out in my head when I'm training a small group and I'm across the gym and I'm maybe with someone on a machine and someone's, you know, 25 yards away from me, and I'm looking at them and I see they're internally rotated and their chin's tucked to their chest during a row. I mean, one thing that I do is I'll kind of get their attention and almost do, I mean, I don't know how else to put it besides saying like a pistol underneath your chin, you know, thumb to your chest and then I put my index finger on my chin, and as soon as I do that with most people, they're like, oh, boom, you know, shoulders back and,
right.
and head up. It's those quick little things you kind of got to learn. But the same thing in the same group of people, I could do the exact same thing to somebody else, and they kind of stop the exercise like, what are you doing? So it's kind of like,
right.
That's a verbal cue. Hey, head up, chest up, shoulders back kind of thing. So it's, you know, one size
sure.
definitely doesn't
sure.
fit all. You hope that like one size fits most.
Exactly. And you know how it is. You get, you want to keep things simplified for your athletes. And, you know, if I tell somebody I want them to perform this movement with a neutral spine, you know, some of these kids don't understand what a neutral spine is.
Right.
So I either have to spend a lot of time in talking about a neutral spine, or I can come up with a cue that makes them understand, you know, how to get in the position that I want them to get in.
Yeah. Yeah. It just takes practice. It takes repetition. Just like you were saying, just like the very beginning on both sides, it's, if you're a coach, it's going to need repetition, going to need to clean it up no matter what level you're in, D1, D2, D3, and no matter what
right.
side of the ball you're on. So,
yep.
Coach, again, man, I really appreciate you taking the time today to shed some light and what you guys are doing over there at University of Indianapolis. If people want to get a hold of you, what's the best way to reach out?
Email is the best way to get a hold of me.
Okay.
And my email address is on our website. It's barrickss@und.edu.
Well, I appreciate you again, Coach, and we'll talk to you soon.
Okay, thank you. I appreciate it.